Thank you, Dan. Good morning, everybody. It's good to see everyone here. Appreciate so much the good rains that we received last night and over the last couple of weeks. It's been badly needed, and we appreciate so much God being gracious to us and granting us that gift. This is Father's Day, and as is customarily the case, our lesson today is going to deal with the subject of fathers. So many different places we could go in the Bible to talk about the role of fathers in our lives, but I keep coming back to the book of Proverbs. When you look at the book of Proverbs over and over again, the author addresses someone that he calls my son or my children. It's clear that this book was written on behalf of a father speaking to his son. And you can almost consider the book of Proverbs to be a young person's guidebook to life. Here's a father passing down the knowledge that he has gained from his own experience to his children, saying, this is the way you ought to live. Do this and you will live. Do this and life will be well with you. Avoid these other behaviors. They're not good. They'll get you in trouble. They'll be your downfall. Avoid that. Don't do that. And over again through the book of Proverbs, that is the story that we encounter. And what I'd like for us to do is look at this passage that Dan just read, chapter 4, verses 1 through 19. Because I think in this section, the father is not merely saying, here's how you ought to live, here are the details. He's giving us reasons why. His advice is important, and why it's in the child's best interest to listen to what the father is saying. So what I'd like to do for our time this morning is to just skim through these 19 verses in Proverbs chapter 4 and apply it to the question of why are fathers important? I think there are three things that the writer here identifies as reasons why fathers are important in the lives of their children. The first reason that Solomon points to can be found in verses 3 and 4. When I was my father's son, tender and the only one in the sight of my mother, he also taught me and said to me, let your heart retain my words and keep my commands and live. Did you notice there are three generations involved here? He speaks of his father. And when he, the author, was small, his father taught him. So you've got the father, and then the author who is writing this, and then you've got the author's son or children. So you've got the grandfather, the father, and the children. Three generations involved here. But the thing that jumps out at me is the idea is that fathers are the primary instrument by which cultural values are transmitted from one generation to the next. The author received his instruction from his father when he was a little boy, and now he, in turn, that he is grown and has a little boy of his own, he is passing that information on to his son, who in turn can pass it on to his children. That's how cultural values are transferred from one generation to the next. This, of course, highlights the role of fathers as the vehicles of cultural value. They are the ones responsible for teaching the next generation. Genesis chapter 18 and verse 19, God said regarding Abraham, for I have known him, that he will teach his children and his household after him, that they might keep my way. In Isaiah chapter 38 and verse 19, King Hezekiah spoke of all that God had done for him, and he made a very personal application of it in his life and said, the father shall make known your truth to the children. It's the father's job to pass that information, that knowledge on. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, a New Testament application of the same principle. Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but do what? Bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. It is always God pointing a finger to the fathers and saying, you guys are the ones that are responsible for training the next generation. It's on your shoulders. You have to do this if society, if civilization is going to survive. Now, that does not mean that mothers don't have a role to play here. Certainly they do. We'll reserve that for Mother's Day. Mothers have a big role to play in teaching the next generation, sure. But I think the main point that we can see here is that fathers carry a certain weight or authority due to probably the fact of their more imposing physical size, their deeper voice in most cases. There's a sense of authority and importance that is attached to the father's instruction that mothers can't quite duplicate. And that raises the question then, what if, given this fact now, that fathers are the primary transmitters of generational values from one generation to the next, what if I didn't have a father? What if my father did a lousy job in teaching me? Well, that's certainly a very real possibility, isn't it? Well, guess what? You have an opportunity to get things back on track again. Now, I know that life can be considered to be unfair, and I didn't get the break that all other kids got, and so I don't know that much about fathering. And believe me, my heart bleeds for you. I realize how tough it can be to take on that responsibility. But I want you to listen to something. This is from Carlfred Broderick. He was a marriage and family scholar at the University of Southern California. He passed away a few years ago, but he wrote a book on marriage and families, you can imagine. But he described someone that he called a transitional character. And I want you to listen to this definition of a transitional character. He describes a transitional character as one who, in a single generation, changes the entire course of a lineage. The most noteworthy examples are those individuals who grow up in an abusive, emotionally destructive environment and who somehow find a way to metabolize the poison and refuse to pass it on to their children. They break the mold. He goes on to say, their contribution to humanity is to filter the destructiveness out of their own lineage so that the generations downstream will have a supportive foundation upon which to build productive lives. What the good doctor is saying here is that it makes no difference. If you had a good, supportive father to pass along societal values to you, whether you had that advantage or not, the responsibility still rests on your shoulders to make a choice, make a decision in your own life to be the kind of father that you know you ought to be. You see, the very fact that you recognize the disadvantage that you inherited from your upbringing equips you to do something about it. You know there's a deficiency there, right? Now, it's going to be harder for you than it is perhaps other young men who are trying to raise families, but at least you're aware of the problem. That means you can make a decision to address it and be this transitional character. Whatever kind of dysfunctional values you may have inherited from your father, it stops with you in your generation. From this point forward, my children are going to have something better in their lives. And I can give you a personal illustration of this. My own father grew up in a home. There were four boys, and his father abandoned the family when the boys were little. My grandmother had to raise those boys all by herself. And this is during the Depression, remember. You just can't imagine how tough it must have been for that poor woman to do what she did raising those four boys. But she did the best she could with it. And all four of those boys, and my father in particular, when they grew up, and they had to serve time in World War II, I mean, they saw it all. But when they came home and all four got married and started having kids, and I can speak specifically regarding my father, that man bent over backwards to make up for all the disappointments and the dysfunction and the lack of fatherly guidance that he had when he was a kid. Was he perfect? No. But I'll tell you what, he did a fantastic job of raising three kids. And we're so proud of him. We lost him 12 years ago. But the man did well. Because despite whatever he grew up with, he made a decision. This is the way I'm going to raise my kids. They're not going to be disadvantaged like I was. And to the day I die, I'm going to be grateful for him and what he did for his kids in serving that role. And that's the opportunity that is available for you as well. So that's the first thing we want to notice here in verses 3 and 4. The fathers are the primary instrument by which cultural values are transmitted from one generation to the next. And fathers need to take that role seriously. Verses 5 through 9 give us a second reason why fathers are important, and that is because fathers help children understand how the world works. Now, you'll notice in verse 4, keep my commands and live. How many of us as children heard our father say some form of that? Do what I say. Obey my laws. And of course, what that means is, because Dad said so, right? He doesn't have to attach a reason to it. He said do it, therefore we'd better obey. Now, I'm not knocking that. That's a father's role. That's his prerogative, and he certainly is justified in doing that. But you'll notice that the author goes on here to say that there's a reason behind why Dad wants things to be done a certain way. And it's because Dad understands how this world works. He understands just some basic laws about how things operate. And he has figured out, however he came to that knowledge, that you need to cooperate with those laws. And it's in our advantage, all of us, to cooperate with those laws. To recognize them and live in such a way that they work to our advantage and not to our disadvantage. Now, he uses a word here that I think is very important, and that is the word wisdom in verse 5. Get wisdom. Get understanding. In verse 7, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. You notice as you read verses 5 through 9, God is never mentioned anywhere in here. God's Word is never mentioned anywhere in here. Now, I'm not saying that's not important. It very much is. But that's not really what Solomon is addressing here. What he's pointing to is that there's just a certain way in which the world works. There is an authority, if you will, higher than Dad. And that's what fathers are trying to get us to understand. It's not just because Dad says so. It's because Dad recognizes that there are these principles in place by which the world functions, and you need to understand how those principles work. That is wisdom. Some behaviors have good consequences, and some behaviors have bad consequences. Wisdom is the ability to tell the difference between the two and to act accordingly. And that's what our fathers are trying to teach us. For example, fathers can teach us very practical skills that can prepare us for life. How to manage our money. Is that important? Can that have a big impact on your future as an adult? You bet. Fathers can teach us how to change the oil in a lawnmower. Is that a pretty important thing to know? If Frank were here, he'd be nodding his head pretty emphatically. You bet. And kids need to know that as they grow up into adulthood. You know, how can a boy learn how to throw a football? Now, does he need to know that to get through the rest of his life? Well, probably not. You know, it is certainly going to serve him well on the playground at school. If he can boast to the other kids, my dad taught me how to throw a football. Here, watch this. I can show you. The big thing? No. But it's important to the kid. He can identify and help the kid understand how to identify poison ivy. And that can be very important when they go camping, right, boys? You got to watch for poison ivy, be able to know how to identify it so you don't get tangled up in it and pay a terrible price for tangling with the poison ivy. And I could go on and on, but what are we doing here? We're just simply recognizing their physical laws. about how money works, about how lawnmowers work, about how footballs work, about how poison ivy works, and all of that. They're physical laws. Dad didn't make these laws up. That's the way the world works. And it's in a child's best interest on this and 10,000 other items to know, as he is prepared for adulthood, to just know how things work, so that he can make the right decisions with regard to all of these laws that are around him. But it's not just the physical laws. It also has to do with what we might call moral laws. How is a young person going to learn how to work hard? You know, at some point, a young person is going to grow up and have to go out into the world and earn a living. What's it going to take to do that? A work ethic. Who's going to teach that kid the work ethic? It's usually dad's responsibility. Taking out the trash, mowing the yard, helping around the house, helping mom, putting away the dishes after supper. All of that has to do with just buckling down and doing what has to be done. It's a work ethic. And dad plays a big role in helping kids understand that. How's a child going to know to be respectful of others and their rights? How's a child going to know that he should be honest and trustworthy and compassionate in his dealings with others? Dad's going to have to teach him that. If he doesn't learn that lesson from dad, life's probably going to be pretty hard for this child as he enters adulthood. It's the ability to recognize all of these laws, both physical and moral, that govern life, and the ability to connect the dots between the behaviors and the outcome of those behaviors that is the greatest legacy that a dad can leave his children. And so, fathers, that's our job, isn't it? We've got to be busy in just helping our kids understand how the world works. Solomon calls it wisdom. Get wisdom, young man. Learn how things work in this world. And your life will just be so much easier in the long run. And by the way, here's the rest of the book of Proverbs that fills in all the details about what that wisdom is. And there's so much more. A lifetime is going to be spent teaching that young person how to live a certain way. Now then, that brings us to verse 10, where we want to notice the third reason why fathers are important. And there is a distinction that takes place. As you look through verses 10 through 17 and 19, it sounds very similar to what we just read in verses 6 through 9. Because wisdom comes up in here as well. But I think there's a subtle distinction or shift that Solomon makes as he introduces a new topic in verse 10. And that is that he's helping the child to understand that life involves one very simple decision or choice that a child has to make. Now, everything up through verse 9 is essentially positive in nature. That is, here's the way the world works. You need to understand that. And you need to adapt to the way the world works. But beginning in verse 10, what Solomon is doing is saying is there is a choice. There is a clear decision that you need to make. And the earlier in life that you are aware of this decision and you make that decision, the easier it's going to be for you throughout the remaining days here upon this earth. And what he is comparing in terms of this decision is the fact that there are two ways to live. Look at what he says in verse 11. I taught you in the way of wisdom and led you in right paths. Compare that to verse 14. Do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of evil. The way of wisdom and the way of evil. Those are the two choices. So verses 10 through 13, and I'll not reread the whole section, but if you just skim through verses 10 through 13, that's the way of wisdom. That's the way I ought to work. And he says, if I do that, you'll be going down the right paths. Your steps will not be hindered. You will not stumble. Things are going to go well for you if you choose the way of wisdom. But if you choose the way of evil, verses 14 through 17, you better know what you're signing up for. In verse 16, they do not sleep unless they have done evil. Their sleep is taken away unless they make someone fall. They eat the bread of wickedness, drink the wine of violence. Your life is going to end up pretty crummy if you decide to go down that path. So here's Dad laying it out very simply, very clearly for his son. You can go down the path of wisdom and life's going to be generally good for you, or you can choose to go down the path of evil and life's going to blow up in your face. Choose one. You see what Dad is doing now to the child? Before that child reaches adulthood and has to go off into the world and make life for himself, he has a father that has just pounded it into his head, there's a good way and there's a bad way. There's a right way and there's a wrong way. There's a way that leads to life, and prevents you from stumbling, and there's a way that's going to lead you down the path that's just going to be miserable for you. Two ways, son. Two ways. You better make the right choice. Now that's related to what he just said back in verses 5 through 9 about wisdom, the importance of wisdom and understanding how the world works and cooperating with that and so forth. That's all right and true. That's the foundation for this. But here the father is making it a little more concrete to the child. Children need to recognize that they have this decision to make, and how they make that choice is going to influence how their lives turn out in the long run. And then notice in verses 18 and 19, how he summarizes or brings all this to a fitting conclusion. The path of the just is like the shining sun that shines ever brighter into the perfect day. That's the person, the young person, that decides, I'm going to live the way of wisdom. I'm going to study how the world works, what these physical and moral laws are that govern life on this planet. And I'm going to do everything that I can to try to live the right kind of life. And Solomon says that's just like the sun that comes up over the horizon in the morning. There's still a lot of shadows, kind of dark. But as that sun rises, what happens? It gets brighter and brighter and brighter until, he says, it shines ever brighter to the perfect day. And that applies to every one of us. If we can dedicate our life as a young person to, as the Apostle John says, walking in the light, to studying life, studying this world, studying right and wrong. It originates with the Bible, yes, but there's so much more that's involved. But I just commit my life to trying to do the best that I can. I'm going to learn, I'm going to grow, I'm going to study. I'm seeking that way of wisdom. And Solomon says it's going to be like that sun that's shining overhead. You can see every pitfall before you get to it. You won't be stumbling around because you have the light. That's what's guiding you in life. That's one choice. That's one option. But verse 19 is the other choice. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. And how many young people grow up and enter adulthood having no clue? They have no idea how the world works, either the physical laws or the moral laws, and they just stumble blindly along from one stupid mistake to the other. And of course, usually they end up blaming people around them for all that's gone wrong in their life. And they truly cannot see, they just cannot understand that it's their own decisions that have brought them to this point in their life. They've made bad mistakes, bad choices, and they're paying for it because nobody trained them. Nobody pointed out to them the path that they needed to walk on. So that's the third reason that Solomon lays out as to why fathers are important. So fathers are important for three reasons. Number one, because they are the primary means by which cultural values are transmitted from one generation to the next. And if you're a father, you've got to recognize you occupy a very key link between two generations. It's on your shoulders to make sure those cultural values are transferred now to the next generation. Number two, it is fathers who help us understand how the world works. Just the basic fundamental realities of what life on this planet is all about. Fathers have to teach their children just these practical rules of the road that can help children understand how to be successful in life. And then the third reason is because fathers help their children to see that life is a choice. There are two very distinct paths in front of them, and it's the father's job to help mold and shape and direct those children to the right path. Get them started off on the right foot. So what happens when fathers don't do their job? What happens if fathers just aren't even around for the children? Well, just take those three principles, those three reasons that Solomon's laid out, and just reverse engineer those, and let's see what happens. If fathers are not around, or if they're failing to do their job as they should, then cultural values are not going to be transmitted to the next generation. That means that their children are going to grow up in a culture that trivializes what is important and exalts that which is cheap and tawdry. All the lessons of the past that civilization has learned are going to be lost in the new generation because nobody bothered to teach them. And that means that society, more than likely, at some point, is going to crumble and it's going to have to be rebuilt from the ground up. And it is going to be a horrible, nasty, dirty job for somebody to clean up because fathers didn't do their job. Number two, children, when fathers are failing to do their job, children are going to fail to learn how the world works, and they're going to make a lot of dumb mistakes as adults that could have been avoided. And you know something else? More than likely, those children are going to know who to point the finger to. As they go throughout adulthood, they're going to, in the depths of their heart, harbor a very deep resentment against the father who failed them. Dads, you don't want your children to remember you that way. Spoke of my dad a moment ago. I can tell you, to the day he died, he struggled with that bitterness about the father who abandoned him. I'm proud of the way he handled it, but it was not easy for him. Dads, you don't want your children remembering you the same way. You get busy. You take this seriously. Because your children are going to recognize as they get older whether or not you did a good job of teaching them what they needed to know. And then the third thing is when fathers are not doing their job or when they're not in the picture, children are going to grow up with no concept of right and wrong. They're going to head off into life being guided by little more than just their passions or whatever what all their buddies around them are doing, and it's going to get them in a world of hurt because you didn't do your job. You don't want that for your kids. You look at our society today. Look around you. Look at the headlines on television and newspapers. What is going on in our country today? You can see the results in so many corners of our society of what happens when fathers fail to do their job. Our society today shows all kinds of evidence of a lack of fatherly influence, especially in urban areas. They are plagued with a dearth of fathers. And the result is packs of kids wandering around living like feral animals. And society is paying a terrible price for this. We have young people by the millions who are entering adulthood struggling to know how to behave as husbands and wives and fathers, which is why the rate of marriage is going down. The rate of cohabitation is going up. And in many cases, young people are just saying, I don't want to have anything to do with the opposite sex. And kids are just checking out of life altogether because fathers failed and did not prepare them for life. And the result is we've got now, today, an entire generation that is woefully unprepared to manage the civilization that they are inheriting. And we're all going to pay a price for that. Because fathers fail to do their job. Let's wrap this up. I want to address specifically four groups of people. Every one of you is going to fit in one of these four groups. You pick and apply how the lesson applies to you. Number one, talking to young fathers. Guys, you'd better take your role as father seriously. Spend time with your kids. Teach them. Talk to them. And yourself personally, study how to be a better father. Read books. Talk to older men to find out how they did it. But take seriously this responsibility that God has placed upon your shoulders to be a father to your children. This is the only chance your children have to make it right in this world. You'd better take it seriously. Second group, older men. Okay, we older guys, we've done our job as fathers, right? Our kids are grown and gone. Our level of influence over their lives is greatly diminished now. So to a large extent, we can kind of sit back and relax. You know, we've done what we could with our children. Hopefully we did it right. Well, if your children turned out right, you have a lot to be proud of there. Congratulations. You can be proud of that. That's an accomplishment. But don't think that your job is done as an older father. There's still a role that you can play in helping the next generation. I spoke a moment ago of younger fathers needing to, if necessary, go to older fathers to ask for their advice. Well, guys, right there, older men, here's a job for you, for me. We need to make ourselves available. We need to offer our support, our encouragement, our advice to younger guys who are seeking it, to know how they can do the job. There are millions of young people today who have no father to speak of. Couldn't we as older men, and with all the experience that we have in raising kids, couldn't we step in and help be kind of a father figure to some of these young people? It's going to take time and commitment and work and a little additional frustration that we thought we put behind us when our kids grew up. But these kids today need fathers. If they're not going to get a father any other way, then who better qualified to do it than those of us who've been down this path before? We need to get more involved with the younger generation and help these kids that are struggling without a father. Third group I want to address, and that is the children, the young people. I know, believe me, I've been there. I know how easy it is to disrespect your dad. An old fogey has no clue what I'm going through in life, and on and on. I understand all of that. And I know your dad's not perfect. He's going to make mistakes. But I tell you what, he's still your dad. And you sure don't want the alternative of trying to go through life without him. Respecting, appreciating, letting know how much you do appreciate his advice and listen to what he has to say. You may not agree with it, but you need to give it a lot of serious thought because he more than likely knows something that you don't know. The fourth group. I said very little in this lesson this morning about the ladies. Talking here about the wives, the mothers, the daughters. Gals, you have a big role to play here as well. Support and encourage all the fathers in your life. Your own physical father, your husband, your in-laws. I mean, there are fathers all around you. And ladies, they need your support. They need your encouragement. It is a big burden that fathers carry for all the reasons that we've just seen here this morning. And they need the encouragement. And when a wife, a mother, a daughter comes to a man and says, "I appreciate what you're doing as a dad," it just means so much to him. It makes it worthwhile. So ladies, that's your role in this. If you're here this morning, you recognize a great gap between you and God. God is your Father, in a very real sense. He wants what's best for you. He's going to discipline you. He probably has already done that already in your life. But He desires what is best for you and has made extraordinary promises to you regarding the future. But in order to appreciate and receive these promises, you have to submit your life to Him. You have to grant Him the respect and acknowledge the authority that He has in your life. You believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. You're willing to repent of the dumb mistakes you've made in your past and turn your life over to God. And you can do that this morning. Confess your faith in Him. Be baptized into water to have all your past forgiven. And you will be a child of God. And in a sense you never knew before, God will be your Father. And He will look forward to receiving you home in heaven. If you need to respond, won't you come and express your need as we sing.